Education Committee to order, please. Today is Thursday, February 6, 2020. The time is 9 a.m. Present are Senator Coggins, Senator Hughes, Senator Costello, Senator Begich, and myself, Stevens. We have a quorum. Taking up today, Senate Bill 169, Alaska State Council on the Arts. Intention today is to introduce the bill, understand why it is here before us, and hear from the Arts Council representative, and then hold the bill for further review. Any comments or questions before we start? Thank you all for being here. So, Senate Bill 169, beginning with an introduction by Representative Tim Lamkin. Thank you, Tim, for being here. Opening comments and a sectional.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tim Lamkin, staff to Senator Stevens and the Education Committee. Before you, Senate Bill 169 is before us at the request of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. To borrow a cliche from other bills, this is kind of a housekeeping bill. It's not just about license plates, as you'll find in the bill. It also provides some for them to have some legal representation from the Department of Law and the flexibility to retain additional or temporary counsel as they may deem necessary. It also, and perhaps most substantively, as a result of the last year's budget cycle, would exempt a portion of their budget from the Executive Budget Act, and that specifically that portion which relates to their efforts in raising private funds for their foundation, private funds from nonprofit entities, and it would exempt those funds from the Executive Budget Act so that all of those efforts and the recognition of their supporters are not summarily dismissed through a veto process. So it would hold those funds harmless. We have some representatives from the organization with us today to go into detail about the bill and the justification for it, but that's a general introduction of what this bill would do, and that with that, if there are no questions, otherwise I would proceed into the sectional.
Please go ahead, unless there are questions. Thank you.
So section one is AS 2810-421A, and it relates to the fees that are collected by the Department of Motor Vehicles, Division of Motor Vehicles. It allows for, currently these plates, this bill wouldn't establish a new plate. It just addresses existing plates for the Arts Council, and currently that plate is $30 when a new one is issued or renewed. And this would provide them the means to set in regulation by the Arts Council an additional surcharge that would go directly to the Arts Council. And it's my understanding presently the text of the bill says it not to exceed $50, but it's my understanding, and this will be confirmed shortly, that we're talking about a $3 surcharge presently. Section 2 relates to the Arts Council generally and their powers and duties to manage their affairs, and it includes the portion of them being able to be represented by the Attorney General, Department of Law, and provides them to retain additional legal counsel as needed. Section 3 relates to also to managing its affairs, and it exempts from the purview of the Executive Budget Act funds received by the Arts Council from private nonprofit foundation partners. And again, it would hold those funds harmless in the event of vetoes and the other budget, the remaining budget process. Section 4 relates to a competition that they hold every 4 years that they would solicit artists to design a plate, a new plate, and rather than it being mandatory, it would just give them the option of having that competition every 4 years. And then Section 5, relating to that same competition, restores the authority for the Arts Council to award a monetary amount set by them in regulation to recognize the artist that won that competition. This provision was repealed in 2018, and their representatives, I'm sure, will be ready to go into details as to how that worked out. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes the sectional. It's a fairly straightforward bill. It's an easy read. Any questions?
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate your comments. Yes, Senator Hughes.
I have a question. Section 2, which is the new section, so they could have representation from the Department of Law. So prior to this, up to now, they've just been using private counsel?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I think that they've been sort of in a gray zone there, but the representatives from the Arts Council are going to go into detail about that.
Okay, I'll wait then. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further questions? If not, thank you very much, Tim. I appreciate your introduction of the bill, and we'll go on to invited testimony. Ben Brown, good to have you with us, Ben. Ben is the chairman of the Alaska State Council on the Arts.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having the bill up this morning and for introducing the bill through your committee. We appreciate that very much. As you stated, I am Benjamin Brown, chairman of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. Just briefly, I've been doing this for a little while. I was first appointed by Governor Murkowski as vice chairman in 2004. Governor Palin chose to appoint me as chairman in 2007, and then I've subsequently been reappointed twice by Governor Parnell, once by Governor Walker, and most recently by Governor Dunleavy. So it's an organization I have invested a lot of my life in, I care very much about. And I also want to note for the record that our executive director, Andrea Noble, is on the line. Our offices are located in Anchorage. Our staff is located in Anchorage. And so we obviously like to economize, so she's participating in this hearing telephonically this morning. Mr. Lampkin did a fine job going through the sectional analysis of the bill. I've tried to work with him and will continue to do so to provide the information needed for the members of this committee, the full Senate, and the other body as this bill makes its way through. And so he described everything quite accurately. Senator Hughes's question first because it's fresh in my mind. It's fair to say that we have been in a gray area. Since I have been a member of the Board of Trustees of the Council, we have had numerous occasions, you know, which happens in life, to need to speak to an assistant attorney general at the Department of Law about various things that have happened. In the interest of full disclosure, I am an attorney and a member of the Alaska Bar Association, so we're not doing this just to create work for my brethren and my sisters in the legal profession. But things arise in the course of normal business for a state agency that require legal advice. And so we've always been able to rely on the Department of Law for that advice. But last summer, after the vetoes were issued on the 28th of June, the Department of Education and Early Development, where ASCA is housed administratively, had an order from the administration to go ahead and try to close things down in an orderly manner. And obviously, my interest was in keeping things open for as long as possible in hopes that there would be a different outcome. And I'm happy to say we're all here today because there was a different outcome. But in the meanwhile, my conversations with the Assistant Attorney General tasked with representing the Department of Education and Early Development in ASCA was kind of in a conflicted position because I was asking her things that were not necessarily the same things that Deed was asking her. So the language in the bill currently comes pretty much straight out of the Limited Entry Act. As you may know, I served for almost 8 years as a member of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and this provision exists in the Limited Entry Act stating that the commission has the Department of Law as its legal counsel but also has the ability to hire outside counsel. So since this version of the bill was drafted, I've conferred with folks from the governor's legislative office who don't think this is the most appropriate language. They support the idea, so I think we've come to an agreement on some compromise language, but the basic intent and effect of Section 2 of the bill will remain the same, even if we change the language a little bit. So, Mr. Chairman, I hope that answers Senator Hughes's questions. Okay, about that, about the nature of that.
Thank you. And while we're on that subject, has there been occasion in the past where you've needed to go outside for legal counsel, or is that the only one that's occurred in recent history?
Well, last summer, the Arts and Culture Foundation is an organization that exists, a nonprofit to support the Arts Council, and the Arts and Culture Foundation actually did engage counsel to help us get through this process. I think where it would arise prospectively going forward would be if we found ourselves in an intellectual property situation involving the Visual Artist Rights Act, which is a federal statute, and there just isn't a lot of expertise in that area, over at the Department of Law. So I think if there was something very specific to some of the artistic programs that we run, we might find ourselves in a position to need to hire someone with some specific expertise like that. We really haven't had to do it in the past except for the odd situation last summer, which I very much hope will not repeat itself ever in my lifetime or ever. I don't anticipate that being necessary, but it just seems wise to have that in the statute so it's clear that that is something that's an option for the Board of Trustees to do if circumstances arise where it would be advisable.
Thank you. Senator Hughes.
I just, Mr. Chair, like to relay a little story where they avoided a lawsuit. I had, you know the license plate that has the picture of the bear in the center standing up? That was submitted apparently in a contest a long time ago by an Alaskan. It turns out it was from a sketch by another artist, and we were able to connect with this gentleman who lived on the East Coast, an elderly fellow, and I'm sorry I don't recall his name at this point, and he he was actually flattered that it was is being used, and it was many years prior that that design had been submitted, and we ended up getting in some sort of honorary license plate for him with the bear, and sent it to him. He was very grateful. But in this case, someone had actually taken his work and submitted it as their own. It did not become a matter of a lawsuit, but it could have become one. So,
thank you. Any other opening comments, Ben, before we open up for questions?
Well, so that addresses Section 2 of the bill. To return to Section 1 of the bill, and I hope that the sponsor statement, since I had a hand in helping Mr. Lampkin draft it, describes the history of the license plate program, because it actually was born of legislation introduced by Representative Kreis Tompkins, which did not ultimately pass. But the former Senator Bill Stoltz allowed the artistic license plate bill language to be attached to his bill creating blood bank license plates back in 2016. At that time, it was envisioned that the artistic license plates would bear a fee similar to other specialty plates. And which we thought, well, maybe this will be a way to create some nice, beautiful license plates that reflect Alaskan artistic values, but also generate some revenues for the State Council on the Arts. We went ahead and conducted the contest, which was really interesting. You know, we had a call for submissions, and then there was a panel. Actually, Senator Costello served on the panel that vetted those and chose some finalists. And then there was an online portal where people could vote, and we had about 15,000 Alaskans vote on the finalists, selecting the license plate that you now see on all the highways of Alaska. I mean, they're incredibly popular. They're everywhere. And I'm really proud of the kind of cars I see them on. You see them on new cars and old cars and big cars and small cars and cars bearing bumper stickers from every point on the political spectrum. So people just like to celebrate the Aurora Borealis and the moon over beautiful Alaskan mountains. And I really like that because it's an example of art bringing Alaskans together. But before we were started issuing the plates, Representative Kreis Tompkins thought, you know, we looked at the numbers, his staff and our staff and me and him, and we looked and we saw that these plates with $50 price tags don't really sell in very great numbers. The most popular one is the NRA, the National Rifle Association, and I just didn't think in Alaska it was likely we were going to outsell the NRA. So we thought, why don't we try issuing these as a regular plate without an additional surcharge and see how well they're received by motorists and Alaskans registering their cars. And they've been incredibly well received. Last year, to date, 30,768 of these plates have been issued. And for a period last year, that was more than either the bear over the counter or the yellow standard. And so there's a great deal of demand for them. So to return to what Mr. Lampkin was saying, Mr. Chairman, the bill allows for an amount to be set in regulation. We have regulatory power under the Administrative Procedure Act as the State Council on the Arts. An amount not to exceed $50. I was not a great student of economics when I was an undergraduate, but I do remember price elasticity of demand, and I think if we put a $50 surcharge on it, it's going to lead to a sharp decrease in the desire for people to pay the additional amount to register their card with this plate. So I think, and so I don't know what the final number will be. The amount that Mr. Lampkin mentioned, I think, would not be a great deterrent to a person as an additional amount to pay to have this plate. But the goal, I think, is to find that sweet spot where we have as many artistic license plates on cars on the roads, but we're also generating a meaningful amount of earned income and revenue for the State Council on the Arts. It won't be automatic, because that would be a dedicated fund, which would be unconstitutional, but the bill basically says that the Commissioner of Administration will separately account for the surcharge, whatever amount it is, and put it in an account, and then the legislature in its wisdom would be able to appropriate that. And the end result would be that we would have a designated general fund component of our budget that allows us to meet our matching requirement with the National Endowment for the Arts. We cannot use our private foundation dollars to make that match. It has to be state money. And it can be UGF or DGF, and as you know, UGF dollars are pretty scarce these days. So we can't make our entire approximate $700,000 in any way, shape, or form with this program. But we could make 5 or 10% of our budget, perhaps. We'll see. So that's really the goal here, is to try to continue a program that celebrates Alaskan art, makes license plates more beautiful, but also generates some funds. So that's how I would characterize, just in addition to what Mr. Lampkin laid out for the members of the committee, the intent of monetizing the license plate program would be. Other points I guess I feel I should try to make, and then I'll be happy to answer questions. Our foundation partners were disturbed to say the least, when all the foundation money was vetoed in addition to the state and federal funds last year, because it's foundation money they're investing in the people of Alaska through the State Council on the Arts. So I conferred with the administration about this provision, and I've not had any opposition to the idea of exempting those private foundation dollars from the Executive Budget Act. The legislature would still need to appropriate our state money and the federal receipts authority, and if we don't have the state match, after a certain period of time, we would be out of compliance with the National Endowment for the Arts under the provisions of the National Arts and Humanities Act, and we would not really be able to receive the foundation money. So all the effect of this would be is to kind of delay a catastrophic event and not have it happen quite as quickly as it happened in June and early July of last year. So that's how I would characterize that provision of the bill in addition to what Mr. Lampkin said. I think
maybe before we go on, then, if we could just continue on that one subject, help us to understand, it's unusual for agencies to have sort of outside monies like that that they operate with. I understand that it's important to the Arts Council. Are there other agencies that do this? And maybe help us understand the funds that you want to protect.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can't speak to all other agencies. I know that there are, the Rasmussen Foundation is our largest foundation partner in the state of Alaska. And it's the Rasmussen Foundation's commitment to healthy Alaskans' lives and lives that are full of meaningful experiences, including arts and culture, that led to our partnership with the foundation. Thanks to that, so most of the Rasmussen funds that are invested go to our arts education programs. And they enable us to do the New Visions program. Your school district, the Kodiak Island Borough School District, was one of the first New Visions districts, and it has the Moonarctic Project now. But the investment of Rasmussen funds in arts and culture through the State Council on the Arts attracted the attention of Margaret A. Cargill Philanthropies, based in Minneapolis. And so now Margaret A. Cargill Philanthropies is investing as much and potentially in the near future more than Rasmussen is, also in educational programs. I believe that now that we are reconstituting ourselves and we're recovering from the shutdown last year, with the right staff in place and continued active participation by members of the Board of Trustees, there are more grant opportunities from national foundations because people are interested in Alaska. You know, we're an alluring, exotic place in the minds of most other Americans. And we have done good work with the money that has been invested. So I believe that going forward, in order to reassure potential foundation partners that their money is not going to be vetoed in a way that they might consider arbitrary or even capricious, having this exemption from the Executive Budget Act will help us forge new relationships. Certainly communicating with leadership at the Rasmussen Foundation and the Margaret A. Cargill Philanthropies last summer after the vetoes, it took a lot of work to ask them please to just give us some time to see if we could arrive at a different outcome. And I'm so grateful for their patience and forbearance because we did manage to, again, survive, and so they are still with us. But as far as other foundation dollars going into other state agencies, I imagine if you spoke to the Mental Health Trust obviously is a large grantor in and of itself, so I don't know that private foundations would be interested in giving them a lot of additional money. But I think there's some other social service agencies run by the state, certainly. The Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault gets meaningful grant dollars from the Federal Department of Justice. I don't really have a lot of other concrete examples to give you. Hopefully it's the sort of thing that if we're leading by example, other state agencies might be able to find the way to do, because it's a great way to bring outside money into Alaska and relieve the pressure on, again, our scarce undesignated general fund dollars.
Thank you, Senator Mayich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, one example that might be helpful here is the UA Foundation, which doesn't, in fact, stand outside the money that we donate if you're an alum or non-alum. To that foundation is private money. It's not subject to the governor's veto, and it's held outside of it. That's one example. The Mental Health Trust does have a substantial amount of money based on its settlement off book, so that is not subject to either the legislature's whim or the governor's whim when it comes to how they spend or accrue that money. While it may not be donated funds, it is a state agency that has those funds external. And, in fact, I think that amount now exceeds the amount that's in the budget amount for the Mental Health Trust. So there's two examples there that are substantive examples of private funds held outside of or non-state funds held outside of the purview of the governor, the legislature.
Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you. A couple years ago, I actually carried a bill for you, which was to try to avoid what happened last summer, and it was to allow you more flexibility in bringing in private dollars. Does this bill fall under that, the ability to bring in a little bit with a fee, or what else are you doing as a result of the bill a couple of years ago? And I know that's slightly unrelated, but because of this fee, I was just wondering if that earlier legislation paved the way for this, or it's totally unrelated, and what you might be doing to expand those private dollars coming in.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hughes, yes. So the bill that you carried was the Senate companion to House Bill 137, which was in 2017 in the 30th legislature. And that bill significantly restructured the council and made us an independent, not an independent, a semi-independent corporation, an instrumentality of the state, whereas before we had been an agency, you know, just an agency of the state. It made our staff part of the exempt service, not in the classified service. It exempted us from the procurement code, and it gave us the ability to set our own personnel policies. And so we actually have an interim personnel policy that we've adopted. We have been doing procurement in a manner that does not have to go through quite all the hoops that the state procurement code requires. And I do not have a graph. I wish I had brought that with me. It's a graph that we've used in some of our budget presentations to the finance subcommittees that shows, and I'll get a copy of it to Mr. Lampkin for the committee, and Ms. Noble, you're on the line. If you could help me remember to do that, that would be great. But it shows the increase in foundation dollars over the years, and from the time that House Bill 137, which was the companion to the bill that you carried, Senator Hughes, through the chair, yes, the foundation dollars have gone steadily up, and currently, now that we're reconstituting ourselves, our ability to reclassify positions and change duties of what the staff at the council are doing is vastly easier than it would have been had those remained classified positions, and we had to go through the reclassification process that's set out in the Personnel Act for classified service. So those are some examples of ways in which, so it's definitely not unrelated. Everything that, the ground that was paved by 137 is now being, I don't know if we're filling in some potholes. I'm going to mess this metaphor up. But we're definitely continuing to try to do the same good work that we started in that process back in 2017.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I want to go back to a point you made earlier, which is to reinforce that the match requirement from the National Endowment requires public funds, not the private funds that you mentioned earlier. That's right, right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Begich, that's absolutely correct. The National Arts and Humanities Act created the National Endowment for the Arts, and it mandates that whatever amount is set by the National Endowment for a state partnership agreement, which is a three-year contract, has to be matched by state funds. It can be earned revenue. It can be from the general fund of the state, but it has to be state money appropriated by the legislature. And Marianne Carter is the current chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts, and I've enjoyed working with her since she was appointed at the beginning of the current presidential administration. She was actually here in Juneau last summer, kind of serendipitously, right before the second round of vetoes were announced on the 19th of August. I guess I remember these dates pretty well. They're seared in my mind. But the prior Thursday, she had spoken to the Greater Juneau Chamber of Commerce, and she made that point, Mr. Chairman, Senator Begich, just to make it as clear as can be. If this was a policy choice made by Congress that there needs to be a meaningful investment by the state to get the federal match, and Alaska is unique in the extent to which that state and federal investment is leveraging a significantly larger private foundation investment. So I think she thinks we're kind of a shining example, and I was grateful to have her here to reiterate that there still has to be that foundation of state and federal investment upon which that is built.
Thank you, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope she came because we had such a great tourism program that it brought her here. But the public money that this generates, as you were pointing out earlier, would supplement your ability to make that match. The risk still remains, though, that if we don't fund the Arts Council, we lose that match money. And I really want to go back to Senator Hughes's bill and what she had suggested earlier, which is you as a steward and your board and the Arts Council has really done a good job of trying to reach out to those of us who privately contribute to ensure that you still retain some ability and authority. But is it possible, if in fact we were the only state in the union to not fund our Arts Council, lose our match, isn't it possible then you wouldn't even be able, even with these protections, you would no longer have the ability to give out arts grants? So is that possible? I guess is what I'm trying to get at here.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Begich, what the ultimate effect of a failure to fund the State Council on the Arts with a state investment, whether that's from designated general funds or undesignated general funds, would be that we would be out of compliance with the National Endowment, and then we would lose the National Endowment funds. It wouldn't happen immediately. If it were vetoed, when it's vetoed, it happens immediately because the federal funds are being basically sent back to Washington. And this is another point I should make. Those funds don't just go back to reduce the federal deficit. They're redistributed to the other 49 states and the territories and jurisdictions, because 40% of the National Endowment's budget has to go to states. So when Kansas ceased to be, became the only state without an arts council approximately a decade ago, we got some of Kansas's money, and so did all the other states. If last year's vetoes had not been reversed, the $700,000 approximately Alaska gets from the National Endowment would have gone to the other states and to Puerto Rico and American Samoa and Guam, so, and the District of Columbia. So what makes it impossible for ASCA to potentially continue existing without the state and federal investment is the Rasmussen Foundation and Margaret A. Cargill Philanthropies are not interested in paying for an education program and all the staff cost of administering it. They're willing to give us money that can offset some of those costs, but they're not going to pay for rent on our office in Anchorage and all the salaries of all the staff and all the dollars to go out there and enrich students' lives with arts and culture. The state and federal investment helps make the agency possible to exist. And when the agency exists, it's possible to go out and get foundation dollars for specific programs that vastly augment our ability to enrich Alaskans' lives with arts and culture. But you have to have the basic infrastructure in place to be able to do the other things. I hope that answers the question.
Absolutely clear to me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ben. So could you help us understand, going on to Section 5, what took place there? At one point, you were able to award artists money for artistic designs, and that was then repealed at some point. Now you're asking for this to return. Could you just carry us through that?
So, again, I mentioned earlier that the original vision for this program was to have a $50 surcharge on plates. After we designed a plate and had a winner, but before they went into production and they were in the DMVs across the state to be put into people's cars, we decided let's see what the program would look like without a surcharge. That change was an amendment to a bill by Senator Egan that was done in 2018. It wasn't greatly debated. You know, I conferred with then staffer Jesse Keel, now Senator Jesse Keel, and Representative Chris Tompkins, and we decided, well, there's another license plate bill going through. Let's just do this little fix here and see what happens. And that's where we got to where we are today with 30,000 plates. When we got rid of the surcharge, we did not want to have a provision that was going to require us to pay money to the artists since there was no revenue being generated by the license plate program. Now that we're envisioning revenue being generated by the license plate program, we think it is a reasonable thing to have the council legally able to provide payment to the artist, because we believe in paying artists. I mean, part of our mission at the State Council on the Arts is not just to provide art for people for free, but to make sure that we have an arts and cultural industry that helps people who want to make a living as artists do so. And so that's where this provision came from. It was repealed not because we didn't want to pay the artist, but because there was no revenue stream with which to make such a payment. Now that there's likely to be a revenue stream, we want to have the ability to make a payment to the artist. I think it's the best way I can try to explain that.
Thank you. Further questions? All right. Thank you very much, Ben. I appreciate your being here. We also have comments from Andrea Noble as well, I understand. Yeah.
Yes, Ms. Noble. So this is our executive director, and she's been with the agency for many years. She was previously the visual and literary arts program director, and she's been the executive director for several years now. And so, Andrea, you are on the line. I'm sure, being an executive director who's worked with me for a long time, you know, you made a list of all the things I've failed to mention, and so now would be a good time to fill in those gaps.
Well, thank you, Ms. Noble. Can you hear us?
Yes. Good morning. For the record, my name is Andrea Noble. I'm the executive director of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, and because I am recovering from a bout of laryngitis, I'll make my comments brief, and my apologies for the lack of expression and enthusiasm in my voice today. I hope that my thoughts translate to you and my gratitude for this opportunity to speak. A couple of the questions were raised through the chair. Senator Stevens, your question about the unusual makeup of our agency being a public corporation, that actually is unique because among state arts agencies in the nation, we're the only agency structured as a public corporation. And when that happened, thanks to the efforts also of Senator Hughes for carrying that bill, the public corporation that we are operating is actually on the leading edge of arts agencies in the nation in terms of organizational structure. So having the freedoms that our chairman has mentioned and the comparison to the UA Foundation, the Mental Health Trust, that puts us in a unique position to generate more private funding, which was a direct result of that change to a public corporation. So, through the chair, Senator Hughes, to pick up on your question and expand on what our chairman has relayed to you, the increase of $1.1 million last year was a dramatic increase of private and foundation funding. And with that graph that we'll make sure that you have later today, the foundation dollars did increase. Unfortunately, with the disruption to services last year, that was expressed as disappointment in our partnership and the ability to receive those funds and execute those programs in arts education is now delayed. So we were on track to show the programmatic and foundation funding increase this year, and we're still working on that. The ultimate failure of effect of funding, I can't stress enough that the access of the license plate without a fee has shown to us the great support of Alaskans in a time when it was critical that their voices be heard in the public process and that our agency exists to serve the public. We're excited that this expansion of the program into revenue may also lead to funding programs that serve Alaskans. And we're looking at that, Senator Hughes, in dynamic ways. As you ask that question, what are we doing? We're looking at the disruption of services as more of an opportunity to connect with other economic and other sectors in our state. For example, the Alaska Marijuana Control Board has asked us to partner with them around education and prevention for addiction, which is a very interesting opportunity when we think about how the arts can relate to healing and the wellness of the state and our constituents and residents. Those are all the comments I have right now, and again, I apologize for the scratchiness of my voice.
Thank you, Ms. Noble. Appreciate your comments. Any questions of Ms. Noble? Thanks for being with us. You're not contagious when you're on the line, so that's good. I hope you get well soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, any further discussion? Ben, any comments you would like to make to sum things up here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Andrea actually sounds a lot better than she did a couple days ago, so I'm glad that she's on the mend. The other day I said, no, this will be a text conversation. I didn't want to put her through it. But thank you for the opportunity. One program I want to mention that we're very proud of and which is really going well is Creative Forces. And that is an arts therapy program that was started by the National Endowment for the Arts in conjunction with the Department of Defense at Walter Reed Army Hospital in Fort Belvoir in the National Capital Area. It was expanded several years ago to 10 military hospital facilities around the country, and Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson was one of those. And that wasn't an accident. We worked very closely with Senator Murkowski's office to make sure J-Bear was chosen as an expansion site. I'm hopeful that the members of the legislature will be able to hear more about how well Creative Forces is going over the course of this year. I met with Senator Reback, who's the Senate co-chair of the Joint Armed Services Committee. As a veteran himself, he's actually been able to participate in some of the activities. Our music therapist, Danielle Kalseth, is at Jay Bear. She has a little dedicated room there full of musical instruments where she meets on a regular daily basis with her clients who are returnees from theaters of war in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places around the world. And they've got severe injuries, traumatic brain injuries, post-traumatic stress disorder, and music therapy is really helping them on their road to recovery and reintegration into society and the workforce and as parents and as family members. And so in addition to the actual Creative Forces program run through the Department of Defense, Americans for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts have created the Community Engagement Program, which we at the State Council on the Arts are partnering with them on. So there's now sort of an informal outside the therapy room opportunity for veterans who are musicians or who become musicians through their arts therapy to engage in jam sessions. And Senator Reback is also a musician. So I just wanted to mention that we hope to be able to work with him, and I believe Representative Tarr is the House co-chair of the JASC, to do something, if not in Juneau during session, later this year, to showcase that really excellent work. Because I think in addition to all of the other programs the State Council has, that one will make you feel like, wow, this agency should exist, and it's doing good things, and it's making Alaska a better place. So I just wanted to get a plug-in for Creative Forces, because it's something we're very pleased about. We have a lot of other programs. I'm always at your disposal, Mr. Chairman, or members of your committee, or any member of the legislature to answer questions about any of those. But for now, I think we've hopefully explained what we're trying to do in this bill. It's not as much as we tried to do 3 years ago, because we got so much done then, but these are some important things that will help us continue on the path towards sustainability and success. And so I think that's how I would summarize, Mr. Chairman, with my thanks, the opportunity to be before the committee this morning.
Thank you, Ben Brown. Senator Hughes.
This is pretty out of the box, but and I don't expect an answer, but I just want to put it on the record because you mentioned the Creative Forces, which is awesome. I attended for the first time the Lullaby Project at Highland Mountain, where the female inmates composed music and performed with musicians from the South Central area, and it was very incredible, and it was I think very life changing for the inmates who participated. And I don't know if the Art Council ever does research, but I would be curious to know if that kind of therapy can help a person, an offender, leave that world of offense. We're working to reduce crime and recidivism in our state, and I learned recently that we often look at the three-year window, which hovers around 60% recidivate, but if you go out 9 years, it's up at 83%. And so anything that can help reduce the number of victims and crime in our state and help these people turn their lives around. And I'm just wondering if that's something the Arts Council has ever delved into and if there's research out there that can help people get on their lives on the right track. And not to mention there's a certain percentage of people that are very artistic and creative, and it could actually become a career for someone as well. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Of course, we have a bill before us, and I appreciate the wide-ranging discussion. That's perfectly all right. We've got some time, and we'll give an opportunity for folks to testify if they want to. But I think everyone loves the Arts Council here, and we'll give you an opportunity to answer Senator Hughes' question. Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Hughes. I'm actually very glad that you asked about that. We have done some work in some correctional facilities around the state, most notably in conjunction with Sea Alaska Heritage Institute here in Juneau out at Lemon Creek Correctional Center. Our former Community and Native Arts Program Director came down and helped co-manage a teaching program for mostly aimed at Alaska Native inmates at Lemon Creek. And it's absolutely true that this is common sense, and this informs a lot. And Senator Coghill, Mr. Chairman, is someone who's devoted so much time and effort towards helping our criminal justice system work right and not lock up people who shouldn't be locked up, but lock up people who should be locked up. And the arts have a tremendous role to play in that. And I, just with the timing of last year, we were not in a position to expand the program, the kind of work that we were doing out at Lemon Creek. But definitely, if you can get someone while they're in prison and if they've had substance abuse problems, while they're sober and they're getting some sort of help to deal with the substance abuse issues in their life, and then say, you have a creative side. What do you think about trying to create this piece? And then the inmates at Lemon Creek were able to create artwork that was being sold, the proceeds of which were going into their prison accounts, giving them some resources so they didn't walk out with nothing to be able to go, you know, pay for rent or, you know, put on an outfit to go try to interview for a job. We in Alaska are not very far along when it comes to using the arts in corrections. California, for all its faults, actually has a very robust correctional creative program. And so I've actually been thinking I would like to, in my free time or in our staff's free time, to talk to Commissioner Dahlstrom at the Department of Corrections, because I think that there's a lot of potential here. We don't have a lot of additional resources, but this is an example of something where there are national foundations that are very interested in corrections and justice reform. And they have resources that we would probably be able to get them to invest in Alaska, because we're not going to have state money just sitting around to put into this. So if we can develop a working relationship with the Department of Corrections, I think we need to get back to what we were doing before we shut down last year. And then I really think things like the Lullaby Project, I think there's a whole lot that could be done. And it's usually not at, you know, your maximum security places. It's at the medium places where people are not in for the most heinous of crimes. But certainly it's something that we've done a little bit of work on, and we would like to do more work on, I guess, is how I would summarize my answer, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Any further questions about Senate Bill 169? Thoughts or concerns? Very well. Thank you very much, Ms. Brown. Tim, you had some comments on license plate data, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens and the committee. I just want to correct for the record, Mr. Brown did great covering all of your questions. Just as regards the data from the Division of Motor Vehicles, he stated that to date that there were a cert X number of licenses that have been issued for the artistic. Just to clarify that, I had put in a request for that information in due diligence, trying to anticipate questions as to how many license plates are we talking about here. I have perhaps an innocent oversight. I'm still waiting for a response from the department to get that data as to what is to date. But to correct the comment, that the data that I was able to find covered from March 2018 through August of 2019. So at that time, during that window, approximately 30,700 plates, the artistic plates, have been issued. So to correct it to date would probably be thousands more than that. But I've yet to find out. I just wanted to correct the record.
Well, good. And as we get that information, we'll share it with the committee so you'll know those facts. Good. Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. We have some time here, so let me give an opportunity. We will have public hearing at a later time, but if there's anyone in the audience that wants to speak to this bill, we'd be glad to give you an opportunity to do that. Hearing and seeing none, we will hold public testimony open. It'll be taken up at a later date, and written testimony can be submitted at any time by emailing senate.education@akleg.gov. Any other comments from the committee? At this time, I'll set the bill aside for a further review, and we'll deal with this expeditiously, hopefully. I have an announcement, though, that you should be aware of. Our next meeting will be tomorrow, Friday, February 7th, at 9 a.m. in this room. We'll continue our hearing on Senate Bill 6, the Alaska Reed Act, and including invited testimony and discussion before of the changes that are forthcoming on that bill. There's no further business to come before us. We are adjourned at 9:44.